Hey there, Friday Night Movie family. You are listening to a very special South by Southwest episode of the Friday Night Movie podcast. Tune in for all of the exciting interviews we have coming to you this week and beyond. And if you're at the festival, we hope you're having an amazing time. Welcome to another South by Southwest episode of the Friday Night Movie podcast. We are here with a star that is literally on fire, in the good way, not in the flammable way, but in the career way, Sonia O'Hara, who has multiple movies that she is directing. She's starred in a TV show on Amazon called Doomsday that she also directed and created. We're so lucky to sit down with her. And she is a friend of one of our favorite human beings in the entire world, Kelsey Lynn Stokes, who's an actor, director, the greatest script supervisor in the history of movies. And so you're automatically part of the family. But anyway, Sonia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. And I'm such a huge fan of Kelsey and for her making that introduction. So I'm glad to be here.
Well, this is exciting. Okay. There's so many things to ask you about, but a big favorite of two out of three of the Friday Night Movie siblings?
No, it's not that I don't. It's, you know what? Just do the intro and I'll defend myself.
Okay. Yeah. Lily, who is not here, Allie will be playing the part of Lily today. And I love a cult documentary, story, whatever it is. We watched the NXIVM cult one, The Vow.
Oh, me too.
And we would call each other after every episode and just recap every single part. Mm-hmm. Now, you created Doomsday. I think one of the elements of every cult thing in existence is that first little bit, it seems like, oh, it's such a nice place.
Yes.
And like you have this, yeah, the people are wearing burlap, but they're meditating.
Like a vegan yoga retreat.
Right. They're meditating. They're all having sex. Like it just like you're like, oh, this seems nice. And then it turns extremely dark and creepy. Tell us how you chart that journey for the viewer.
So for me, I was always really intrigued by the things that seemed innocuous, like the soul cycle people, or like,
or maybe the boxing gym people, like Allie.
I feel very attacked right now.
And like people who go to Erewhon and spend $22 on smoothies every day. And I feel like all of these things are these really like innocuous gateway entries into a world that can be like a little more insidious. Like it's easy to hemorrhage all your money and get like caught up in a superficial world or whatever else by drinking the proverbial Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. So I just thought to myself, when I see a lot of cults depicted on screen, they're joyless. And what would make those people want to get there initially? So I think the allure of like hip, young, sexy millennials and Gen Zs that have what could theoretically be a positive way of seeing the world in terms of like, you know, eliminating your like carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. And then once you all agree on principles that could be pretty cool, then the bait and switch happens. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, you know, stuck in this world where next thing you know, you're giving them your social security number and, you know.
And they're drowning you, which is the first thing that happens in Doomsday. Look at all these beautiful people. Oh my God, they just drowned them.
Yes, right. And I don't know if you knew this, but one of the reasons that I wrote it was one of my first jobs in LA when I was 20 years old is I was called in to do these like non-union industrials. And only later did people tell me they were Scientology propaganda films. Oh. And people started to see me in all these like Dianetics videos on the website. And I had just thought I was portraying girl who couldn't get a date. And then they like show me like failing to communicate. And then I'm not in the part where they like show how this shit goes down. And then suddenly I'm flouncing through a farmer's market and everything is idyllic and wonderful. And people were like, yo, are you a Scientologist? And I had no idea what they were talking about.
So this is like, like in one of those workplace videos where they're like, Terry just spoke to someone inappropriately. And then like the question mark comes up and you're one of, so those people, like you've done training videos at work. So those people might not know what they're in either. And they could be reusing those videos for cults.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was for this one, I was brought in for beautiful reenactments. Oh. So I'm just seeing myself with, like, a beautiful male actor, like, in this restaurant scene where they have a ton of extras and they're making it, like, they're really hemorrhaging money on these things.
Oh, so wow.
It was, like, kind of a cool day player job.
Right.
And then next thing you know, you're all over the website.
The face
and
I'm kind of fascinated by how much money they're spending to make this. This sounds like a big production. Like, I mean, it's not surprising, but, like, wow.
In LA, they just have, you know, those giant Scientology headquarters and the Celebrity Center, and I just happened to live in the neighborhood and responded to a casting call.
Wow.
And then I fell down, you know, the like Google hole of reading the Vanity Fair expose and the girlfriends that were like auditioned for Tom Cruise and all of that stuff. And it just made me really interested in what seemed like a positive day on set. And everyone treated me so lovely and everyone was really nice. But then I was like, wow, I thought I was having a positive experience with something that is actually causing colossal damage. And then I just started like playing with the idea of the facade of happiness versus the dark simmering fucked up underbelly.
And I assume they own your image in like perpetuity, like past the alien.
I mean, for like a million billion years they
own. Billion years. Yeah. Yes. I was pre-SAG at that point. So they definitely, anything I shot, they will own me forever.
So you're writing a wrong.
So you're writing a wrong with this. Okay. The casting in Doomsday is wonderful. It does include Kelsey Lynn Stokes,
who
literally explodes into the last the last part of the first episode.
Yes, Kelsey is dynamic and so messed up and dark, and she's able to tap into like anger and simmering rage that I wanted to use in this character. And I had seen her in a film a few years ago, and that was when I decided to cast her. So our friendship happened after we started working together, really.
Oh, wow.
She had gone to the same theater school with me in New York, but at a different time. So I just fell in love with her work, and then afterward we became wonderfully close friends, and now I'm going to her wedding.
That's so lovely.
Yeah.
You're going to her wedding?
Yes.
All right, well, we're all going to hang out there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's great. All right, so this is sort of like we're setting up our table for the wedding.
Yeah, you have your, you should send requests.
Yeah, exactly. I'm requesting you.
I know.
For,
we are now.
That's it. We have a crew.
Cocktail hour. Here we go.
Well, that's a lot of fun. The other casting that is amazing, and the name is escaping me right now, but it's the Swedish lady.
No, the cult leader.
Oh,
the cult
Karen Agstrom as the cult leader.
When I imagine cult leader, every element of her is it's perfect. It's everything from just her look and her physical appearance to like the creepiness of her voice and her accent and the way that she stands apart from everyone. Just
Karen is brilliant, and she's somebody that I had known. She used to be like a big Swedish model, and she was so disgusted by sort of the beauty standards that the idea of coming in, I had pitched it to her as this weird Tilda Swinton-esque.
Oh, yeah.
Very Tilda Swinton-esque.
And I said, I want you to be raw. I want you to be disgusting. I want you to just, you know, grow out hair all over your body. Like, there were also moments we were going to, and if the show ends up continuing more, she was really breastfeeding her baby during that period. And she was like so down to like do everything on camera and just use and channel her femininity into ways that we hadn't really seen. Like, she was willing to go weird and grotesque, and she's so interesting.
The character's weird and grotesque without lactating on screen. Like, it's already...
Right. She translates it very well.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah, Karen is tremendous. And then there was an actress in it that ended up starring on The Sinner. Her name is Alice Kremelberg.
Oh, yeah. Love The Sinner.
Yes.
Love The
and
Sinner.
And Alice was the lead in the third season, and she's just so interesting. And now her career, she's like the lead on a Disney show. Mm-hmm. And there's another actor, Mark St. Cyr, who was in The Menu. It was fun to see him on billboards everywhere, and he starred in the Disney show. So I felt like I was getting a lot of talented people right on the precipice of their careers imploding.
It seems like you're making a connection between cults and Disney, and I want to explore that further.
Yes.
Is there something you want to unpack there?
Yes, I'm not touching that one. I've already shat on Scientology.
So, okay, do you have like favorite cults that were part of your research? Ooh, like, they don't have to be like ones you endorse, but just ones where you were like...
Stories.
When I was running my last half marathon, I listened to the Jonestown podcast.
Oh, wow. That's a classic.
It.
Whoa.
And that was one of my favorites. I mean, that's, you know, not favorites in a fun way, but, you know, it's just one of the most horrific situations of, you know, just how you can, I mean, you know, the drinking the Kool-Aid obviously, you know, comes from that. But that one was really darkly macabre and just so, so sad. Just people wanting to get out and how it involved children. And I think that was just ghastly. Like you said with Nexium, I'm super into...
Nexium is fascinating.
Yes. I mean, the idea of... It's my two favorite subjects, sort of that nexus of, you know, cults and Hollywood's underbelly and that thirst for success at any cost.
Yeah.
And also, it has a lot of Canadians.
It does.
There's a whole Vancouver plot
right,
in that.
Right, there's like all the CW stars. Yeah, yeah.
Shai first told me about Nexium when he was going down a cult, you know, rabbit hole, and he was like, yeah, and it was founded in Schenectady, New York, just a couple miles from where I grew up. And I was like, that should be your first red flag. No one who has found the answer to life's whatevers is going to be in Schenectady. Red flag.
That's
get
amazing.
Out.
That's a hot take. I love that.
Yeah. Nothing good happened
that's
in
true.
There.
Everyone moves to the city. Yeah.
Okay. So Doomsday on Amazon,
yes,
which is really cool. But you're directing like many other things that are coming, and they're all kind of eerie, it sounds like.
I say the through line in my work is everything should be dark, provocative, and cerebral. Mm. And when I've started to, this last year has been cool because I started, ever since my Lionsgate movie came to theaters last summer, it opened the door to getting offered a lot of horror movies. And as much as I love smart, elevated, sophisticated genre stuff, I didn't want to be pigeonholed just into paranormal house movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whatever you've done last is what you're going to get. And it started to be so specific that I was only getting offered Airbnb horror house movies.
Oh my
God. Oh my goodness.
And that was crazy. But I'm attached to direct a cool psychological thriller, and we have Harvey Keitel and Rita Moreno.
Wow.
Here.
Legends.
Amazing. I'm so excited to work with those people. I mean, Rita, I grew up watching West Side Story, and Udo Kier is in all of the...
Oh, Udo Kier is in that? That's, I'm already scared of your movie, in a good way.
Yes,
like, he's a genius.
Udo was the only one who, you know, he, like, doesn't want to meet on Zoom, and he's sort of technology adverse. So he had me come down to his weird, like, gorgeous mid-century home in Palm Springs to meet him for lunch.
Cool.
And it's like an adapted library, and it's filled with avant-garde art, and he has a giant snapping turtle named Han Solo. Oh,
perfect. Everything about this is perfect.
This is the best thing I've ever heard, because I, first of all, Udo Kier is incredible. Oh. Like, we even loved him in Bumper in Berlin, the Pitch Perfect TV show, where he plays the evil dad. But then, like, he played Hitler on Hunters, and he's
played
brilliant.
Hitler a number of times.
He's played Hitler a few times.
Yep.
I wonder. I mean, you know, I'd love to interview Udo Kier, and I guess maybe he gets. Maybe it's an uncomfortable question, but man, that guy does a good Hitler.
He does. We talked a little bit about that, and he was pleased that this wasn't Hitler that I was offering him. So, and he said he was like about to play Hitler again.
Oh, but he's brilliant, and it's so cool that you're going to get to use him in a different way. I love anything he's going
to
be in.
And he gets to be charming in this, and sort of disarming, and this mercurial, interesting man. And he was talking to me about his big acting technique is he really cares about doing like an activity, and that he'll like lose himself doing like a physical sort of act on camera. And he's just very particular and very brilliant, and would tell me like just how, like he was telling me all the Lars von Trier stories and just all, it's just, you know, and the Madonna stories.
Oh my God.
And I just think he's such an interesting human, and I was just in awe getting to talk to him. So it's going to be fun to get to see him and Harvey.
I can't wait. I already can't wait.
Playing brothers. Yes.
Harvey Keitel. Okay, like, you know, being a kid from the 90s, right? Like, I mean, Harvey Keitel obviously goes all the way back, all the way back. But like the 90s was like Harvey Keitel explosion, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, Dust Till Dawn. It was like nonstop. If Harvey Keitel was in it, I feel like everyone was going to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
No matter, Harvey Keitel's in it, that's awesome.
Right, and there's that famous quote about like Harvey isn't just a star, he's a planet or something.
How do you, like, you're confident and brilliant in all of these things. but there's like, to me, it seems like there's a difference between directing a bunch of people your own age.
Yes.
In an edgy sex cult story.
Very.
And literal Hollywood legends. You just named three in a row. Harvey Keitel having worked with Scorsese and Tarantino.
Yeah. It hasn't yet. It's coming up.
It's coming up.
No pressure. How are you going to handle that?
So in my last film, I got to direct Bruce Dern.
Damn.
And Bruce was the coolest. And I felt like I had been so intimidated knowing when he was going to come to set. Yeah. And I was prepping so hard. And it was all just really, you know, I felt I was having imposter syndrome. And you just feel like you can't possibly have anything in common with somebody who's worked with Hitchcock and Tarantino. Mm-hmm. And like they're name dropping mm-hmm. these insane things. And then you just realize that the people that are far above you that are willing to work with young directors that maybe they don't know all their work are people that are just so artistically delighted by new stories and new way of telling stories mm-hmm. that I find that they're the coolest people on the set and the people that are the most engaging and trying to serve my vision. And I learn a ton from them. And I always make sure to not geek out and ask them the film bro questions that I want to know everything until we're done shooting and they're in ADR. And when I have them in the studio, that's when I get to, you know, take my first selfie with them and like reveal how psyched I am to be in their presence. But they're normally just hyper trained, classically trained actors, and that's my background. So I feel like as long as I speak to them as a fellow actor, and also directors, in my opinion, are the department head of actors. So when you're on set, if you just treat them as like it's us against the world, I feel like I get to spend real time with them on set, because with other actors, I'm having a million other things and people will pull me away. But with mm-hmm. those actors, they command such respect that it's the one time on set that I get to say, fuck every other department. I'm just going to sit down with this actor and get to like play and create. And that's really
fun.
That's
fantastic.
Stephen Lang, too, was the other actor.
Oh, shit.
Avatar. Stephen,
that Avatar, VFW, which I don't know if you've seen.
I haven't seen VFW.
VFW is a great survival horror.
Oh.
Where it's him and a group of army veterans trapped in a Veterans of Foreign Wars like bar all night being attacked by like crazed junkies.
That sounds amazing. I need to totally see that. And I'm sure if he's playing someone with PTSD, he'd be terrifying.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
That's so cool, awesome. Stephen Lang. Wow.
Yeah. So
But it is really interesting working with these people who have nothing to prove. And then in some ways they're released from any stress.
Well, they're just there to do the work, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's got to be
really. And it's younger actors that are starting to get big careers that are the albatross around my neck when I'm on set. It's not the seasoned pros. They make my life easy. The young people that are posturing, that are closer to my age, they're the ones that often, it's just harder.
It's a different challenge, yes. Yeah.
Okay, that's so cool. All right, so you have that cooking.
Yes.
What else is cooking?
Next, I am directing a sci-fi in Windsor, Ontario, called Anna's Skin, and it's by the team that did, they did Christine, that went to Sundance with Rebecca Hall.
Okay, cool.
Did The Lifeguard with...
When you said Christine, I was thinking of Stephen King's haunted car movie.
Oh, that would have been amazing. I hope I get to do something. That would be hilarious. Yeah, and they did The Lifeguard with Kristen Bell.
That went yeah. I love that movie.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Love that movie.
Yeah.
So dark. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting.
Yeah, and this is just like this interesting sci-fi two-hander about this... It's like playing with relationships and AI in sort of an interesting character-driven way that I think it's going for Ex Machina meets like Suddenly Last Summer. Like it has this like Tennessee Williams sort of poetic like language. It's fun. I'm excited for both of those.
The title just creeps me out. I'm unnerved by the title alone.
Good. Yes. Yeah. And then after that, I wrote a project that's back to my world of cults called Cottagecore, and that's
amazing. What?
I cannot wait to hear about this. I learned the word cottagecore from an awesome Gen Z person I worked with in my last job. Yeah, Arona. She's super cool, and I accidentally used her mug, and she was very cool about. And from then on, I would always go to her desk and like bow and give her the mug out of respect, because it's not cool to use someone's mug. But once she lost the mug and she described it to me as cottagecore, and I needed a whole explanation about cottagecore.
It's an entire subgenre.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so I decided to just write about, you know, like hipster Gen Z types that live in the city, but really, you know, idealize this rural life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I had been dating a girl at the time who would tell me about these like sexy weekends away where she would like go to the forest and reenact like animal sexy times. And it was so weird.
Whoa.
That I wow. was like, wait a minute, I need to unpack all. I don't have any point.
That's part of cottagecore? I thought it was just like a mug with a well, chicken on
there's
it.
There's both, right? There's the aesthetic.
It's like, there's the aesthetic cottagecore.
There's the aesthetic. And then there are like these lifestylers that are like in the poly community that will decide to like find different parts of like rural outdoor life to sort of cosplay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I just.
Sounds like very muddy.
Yes.
Well, that's my biggest concern about
this. Right. I will say that when I was defining, because like on page two of the screenplay, it like, you know, smash cut into the word cottagecore and then, you know, like the definition from like Urban Dictionary, and that, you know, deviates away from what I'm talking about it with the cosplayers. But it all was in this, you know, world of people that want to like, you know, do like Marie Antoinette's when she went off and like went and like lived on a farm and pretended she had this rural life as opposed to being, you know, in the palace. And, you know, it's that contrast between rich people, you know, pretending to enjoy the aesthetics of rural country life.
Like glamping.
Glamping. Glamping is part of it. And there's a whole component within the cottagecore script where they go glamping.
Oh, amazing. So,
this is amazing.
This is amazing.
I can't wait to see this.
Yes.
It's going to be awesome.
And I'm working with Ty West's wonderful long-term producer, Peter Falk, on that one.
Wow.
And he has Maxine coming out, and they did X and Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a dream.
Can't wait for Maxine.
Pearl.
I can't wait for Maxine, too.
And X Pearl is the one that you're thinking
I
of.
Know, but that, yeah. Then you asked if I want to see Pearl.
I keep asking. I'm like, can we watch
not.
Pearl? And everyone's like, no.
I was
love
Pearl
it.
For Halloween, and it
but
was really fun.
You could pull that off.
Yes. In the best, it's a compliment that I don't want to watch it because it creeps me out
so much. It's too scary.
Yes.
Which means that it has achieved its goal.
Yes. No, Pearl is just, there's something that's so sinister about this like wide-eyed, idyllic little girl doing these depraved things.
So in addition to Pearl, are there any other villains or heroes from this genre of, from like horror whatever the heck Pearl is. I don't know.
Is anyone familiar with Ginger Snaps?
Yes, absolutely.
That is something that I've been looking into trying to get the rights to like redo.
That's
because
like Canadian.
I'm just,
that's like a
Canadian
that's a
IP.
Canadian. I remember that from when I was in like high school or middle school.
Yeah.
Definitely saw that a bunch of times.
Depraved werewolf Lolita characters. Yes. It was in my wheelhouse.
Snaps are so good.
Yes. So that's something that... That kind of female character I'm interested in sort of putting in my work. So that's weird and hyper-specific. And
I know exactly
I've been going out and for a lot of smart horror films. Like this year has been cool because I've been meeting with companies like A24 and just trying to find cool projects at the right cool companies. And it's been nice to finally be in a financial position where I can pass on things that don't resonate with me, and they might be perfect for somebody else, right?
That's
so
great.
It's never, you know, condemning the material as much as me knowing I'm not the right person to tell that story.
That's great.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. We always like to wrap our show with recommendations.
Ooh.
Do you and they can be anything. Like, you've obviously recommended many cults for people to join. a few movies or some of the folks that you're working with. But yeah, like, what are you watching? What are you into? What should our listeners, it's everyone's favorite part of the show, what should they, it's the recommendations to take a page from our friend Leah Jones has an amazing podcast called Finding Favorites with Leah Jones.
Yeah.
And her entire premise is recommendations without the algorithm. So taking a page from Leah, we really like that, which is, I'd much more interested in what someone whose opinion I understand and I got to learn about, what they're recommending, than like what Netflix category comes up based on my previous choices.
Yes. I mean, this one isn't that obscure, but I've been rewatching The Leftovers on HBO. Oh,
cool. Lily is really into that.
And I think it's incredible. I think it's just, you know, they do a second season that basically takes place in this purgatory-esque world of like, it's like creepy carnival vibes. Cool. And I just think it's a very existential dark show that I'm always finding character actors. Anne Dowd was one of the people that popped off out of that show. And they're just actors. And I'm like, oh, I want to cast you and you and you. So I've been rewatching that as I write a new thing and just trying to, I'm just interested in that weird sinister but existential vibe.
Lovely. Oh,
sinister but existential vibe. Hmm. That's a great way.
Terrifying.
And there's a cult in that. It's big time cult vibes. So, yeah.
All right, Sonia O'Hara. Like you're on a rocket ship. This is amazing. We're so glad you made time to hang with us.
I got an interview with you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a blast. You guys are very fun.
All right, we'll see you at the wedding.
Yeah, see you then.
Catch you at the wedding.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Friday Night Movie, the sibling rivalry and pop culture podcast. Join the Friday Night Movie family by following @FryNightMovie on all of the socials and visiting our website, FryNightMovie.com. Our theme song is by What Does It Eat? And make sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Friday...